To be a wordsmith is defined as a person who writes, an author, a journalist, a person who commits their thoughts to paper. But I believe it is so much more. The ability to craft a story, to change lives, to transport the ordinary life to an extraordinary place, to put words on paper and awaken the imagination in ways that the reader never dreamed possible. Yes, to have the ability to see what isn't there and make you see it too. To awaken the senses in new and amazing ways, like feeling a cool breeze on a hot summer day on your cheek. To smell wildflowers as they bloom. To taste a delicacy on foreign soil. To feel like you've never felt before, touching places long forgotten, connecting your soul in new ways. That's what writers do. It's my pleasure to host Carolina Writers Speak, a new podcast, a chance to hear actual writers' voices, hear what inspires them, experience their trials and their struggles, and realize that we all have a story and it's worth telling. Hi, this is Rose Cushing, and I'm the host of Carolina Writers Speak, a literary podcast. Very excited today that our guest is Dr. Lisa Genosa. And Lisa has a new book coming out, called Incurable Hope. So welcome to the show, Lisa.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the invitation.
So tell us a little bit about you.
Well, let's see. I'm actually a physician assistant. So not a doctor, but okay. Pretty close. We do a lot of the same, right?
Absolutely.
I'm also a wife. I am a speaker, an author. I'm a dog mom, but I think my most important job in the whole world is I'm a mother.
And so tell us a little bit about your book. Incurable Hope is such a great title.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Well, the book really came out of some very unfortunate circumstances. My son has an incurable disease of substance use disorder, and he is doing very well today. But several years ago, he had a very, very bad interaction with, a nearly fatal interaction with the police. And as a result, we kind of got thrown into the world of, addiction and policing of addiction and mental health. Being on the inside in the medical world, being on the inside and growing up actually with a mom in law enforcement. She was a liquor and narcotics agent for most of my life. So I had, that involvement. I was able to see all of what was happening through those lenses.
Right.
And as a result, I kind of just had this cathartic purge is what I've kind of coined what happened. And I let out everything on paper, first on paper and then on my, then typing on my computer and wrote about what happened to him. And many, many years later, after we had been through so much, we learned that he had been assaulted by a football coach. And so that kind of added to the book and his trauma added to his substance use disorder. And I really just felt it was important to put that information out there in a memoir and really a survival guide for other folks dealing with, the combination of substance use disorder or addiction and mental health and trauma and how that all interfaces with, the medical communities and the law enforcement communities and honestly how we can turn that around and all work together to have better outcomes overall. And that's my goal now.
Right. It's sad that it's so easy for kids to get swept up into that. And before they know it, they're over their head. And if you're not really paying close attention all the time, you don't see it until it's too late. So
of course,
bravo for you for stepping in and getting involved and understanding.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we've my husband and I, you know, we did it. I always say with a blindfold on for a long time. We were really just out of our league, and I don't know if it's a league you want to be in, but we were out of our league when dealing with our son with addiction, and made so many missteps and so many mistakes, and I wrote about all of that so that others don't make all those mistakes and kind of have a guideline, you know, some basic knowledge that we didn't have to help them through it. And hopefully it'll help someone else.
Now, what do you feel like are some signs that people can look for in their loved ones or their significant others and see something that's not right that should be a red flag?
Wow. it eluded us. You know, my son was very young. He started drinking around the age of 12 or 13 with his father. And it's my, you know, from a former relationship. And so when he would come home, we just thought, you know, a lot of it was normal mood changes, you know, young adulthood, just normal, right? And
right.
even some of the experiences that young people have with alcohol and marijuana and things that, you know, I don't think are good experiences, but they still have them. And we just really, unfortunately, felt like some of it was natural teenage experience. And unfortunately, we missed a lot of the signs, which for him, you know, a lot of what we call, you know, emotional mood swings, sleep disorders. But later, after he had the trauma experience, he was having, you know, very regular, almost nightly nightmares. And we didn't know a lot about things like that. So there are features and are specific things that are associated with signs and symptoms, but they're really, they can be really elusive and really hard to pin down because they mimic so many other conditions and so many other, you know, life stressors. So it's very hard to actually say for sure.
I agree. And you know, it's tough too, because you don't want to be accusing them of things that they haven't done, and you're trying to keep that delicate balance of trust until you're
absolutely
sure. And it's by the time you're sure, you're really deep into the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And for us, it was really having, you know, legal consequences. A DUI was sort of the first eye opener for us, unfortunately.
Right.
And then when you start getting into hospitalizations and rehab and things like that, it really, you know, there's no going back. It's full on, and you fully are recognizing what you're up against.
Right. And so what steps did you guys take to get him into rehab, and was he cooperative and willing to do that, or did that take a few trial and efforts?
That definitely took some trial and error. You know, of course, especially younger people with true substance use disorder are extraordinarily resistant to any kind of rehabilitation or even the idea that they have a problem. And so it took really almost destitution for him. He had, you know, you finally get to that point, you have no job, you have no place to live, you have no money. Okay, why is that? And you recognize it's from the substance. You know, he kind of conceded to going to rehab the first time. Unfortunately, the trauma for him really perpetuated his condition. And they weren't initially treating the underlying cause, which in so many cases is either mental health or trauma or both. And those things were not addressed initially.
Right.
And so as a result, my son went through rehab 9 times.
Right. Well, that sounds about right. I mean, it's hard to change yourself and make that change. It's tough, and letting them hit bottom is tough too.
unfortunately for him, his bottom was what we thought was his bottom, or what would naturally be anybody's, did not end up being a rock bottom for him. And that was the night that he was suicidal and was unfortunately asking officers to shoot him. He was unarmed, but instead of sort of managing a crisis situation, they actually put him in jail and subsequently in solitary confinement in withdrawals. And so that's why when I say it was a very near deadly, near fatal interaction, it really was. And it was all, you know, handled inappropriately. Now, this was several years ago before we've really got into understanding crisis intervention. And so as a result, I said, you know, crisis intervention didn't occur in this case when it should have.
Right.
In that moment. Right. So I decided to take it upon myself to start teaching crisis intervention training for paramedics and officers and, you know, other medical professionals with Trillium Health Resources. And so that was a big transition for me. So when my son was sober, I was able to like kind of give back and kind of turn the tide and say, look, there can be an answer for this. In addition, I ended up working with the heroin, it's called SHARP, the Sheriff's Heroin Addiction Recovery Program in the correctional facility in Greenville. And that's for individuals addicted to heroin that actually are vetted into a recovery program in the correctional facility. So these are highly selected individuals that truly want recovery.
Right.
And people volunteer with them and help them to recover. And it's an incredible program. And I did a couple of other initiatives, but it was really to create the change that I wish, you know, as they say, the change that I wish to see in the world is what I was going for and what I'm still pursuing. I really am still working in these different environments, and that's why I wrote the book. And, you know, why I want to continue to create change, because I do believe that it can happen. I'm optimistic, and I don't want anybody else to go through it what my son did.
Well, you know, I'm so in awe of the work you're doing, because if you save one person, just one, it's all worth it.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
And you sound like that you're well on the way to making a difference in a lot of people's lives. And, you know, the sad thing about crisis is that it's not just the person that's in crisis, but everybody around them. So, you know, giving those folks insight and training and understanding, you know, that makes a big circle of what you're doing to make it better. So that's really, really good.
That's awesome that you brought that up. It's actually more true than people realize. So I use the analogy when one person with addiction is a bowling ball, the bowling pins are everyone around them.
Yep.
And that bowling ball comes down and it takes everybody out. And that's the family and employers and, you know, friends and relationships. That's all those people are the bowling pins. And so when I wrote the book, I wrote it from that, like for those individuals, for all of us bowling pins out there, because we're the one taking, you know, sort of the brunt of the experience without, you know, any guidance, any safety net, anything. And so I really provided a lot of information for people to have, so that they could get through the experience of their loved one's, you know, substance use disorder. It's really important. So it's why I did it.
That's really, really incredible, because, you know, when you have a family member, my first husband was a terrible alcoholic, and he would swear he wasn't because he only drank beer, but he was.
Right.
And, you know, you always, as humans, we assume that we've done something wrong and it's our fault and we failed. And that hinders us from being able to really be a help, because we're so wrapped up in our guilt. So having those resources and those tools are so imperative.
Oh, it's so important that you said that, because, you know, it took me between 10 and 15 years, like really swimming in that guilt, to get to the point where I could truly help.
Yeah.
And that is why I wrote this, because I don't want people living in that, you know, the filth of guilt, we'll call it, because it really does. It really inhibits any help that you can give to your loved one, and they need it. They need you. They need you to be, you know, to be present. They need you to be able to help them. And you can't do that when you're sort of bound by guilt or denial or, you know, all the other emotions that are associated with this disease. And, you hit the nail on the head there. It's just really important to get out of that phase so that you can move on to helping the people that need the help the most.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, did you self-publish your book or traditionally publish?
Well, it's something in between called indie publishing. So I did use a publisher called Capuccia, and I'm really excited to be working with them. They're incredible.
That's really great. And in doing your book, what would you say was your biggest obstacle to getting it finished and getting it out there?
I found out that after I wrote it, which I thought was the hardest part.
Yeah.
That was by far the easiest.
Yes, it was.
Doing this part of it, the publishing part, it's a long process, long, arduous process. And you really just have to have the stamina and the patience to withstand, you know, the what it takes to get through that. And if you're passionate about what you're trying to get out there in the world, you'll do it. But you know, that's the toughest thing, is just the timeline and the demands. And after writing the book is the hardest part. And I never would have believed that if someone told me that. I never would have known, but it has been, definitely.
It truly is. I'm very involved with a group of writers, and yeah, you know, we support each other and try to have launch parties and book signings and keep all those things going, because, you know, in all the publishing companies, even if you sign with Random House, they kind of put a parachute on you and give you that open the door marketing and shove you out the plane and say, good luck.
Correct.
Obtaining those skills is tricky. There's no doubt about it. Do you have other books on the horizon that you want to write?
You know, people have asked me that already, and I've thought about it. There is an idea that I have that I'm going to kind of hold close to the vest right now, but it has the potential to be pretty powerful. So I'm not sure exactly what kind of media it would come out in, but that's what I'm working on. That would be my next thing, but that's down the road. This is number one right now. And even before that, even before this book, is always my patience, because I love my patients. I love taking care of them. And before the book is my family, my son, and making sure, you know, we're all good and healthy.
Right.
And then comes the book, and then comes the next initiative.
There you go.
So we'll see.
There you go. Fair answer. Do you have any advice to folks out there who are currently working on a big project like this as to how to keep that mental fortitude and keep going?
If you are passionate about what you are writing about, I don't think anything can get in your way. I really don't. If you have a message or something you want to share, or somebody you're going to help, or some way you're making a difference, I think that passion will drive you every single day. But it is important to not step away from it for lengthy amounts of time. Really do a little bit of something every day, even if it's 5 minutes, but usually ends up being a lot longer than that. Do something with it every single day so that it doesn't get set aside and forgotten about. That would probably be my only advice right now.
That's good advice, because keeping that going and keeping that momentum going once you've got it started is always a tough thing.
It is.
Without a doubt. And so your son is doing well now. So that's really, really good news.
he's doing fantastic, and he's an incredible human that inspires me every single day.
I'm sure of that, you know, from your dedication to that problem, because the easy road is to throw your hands up and say, this is beyond my pay grade. I can't do this. And you didn't do that. You know, you stuck it out and got in the trenches with him. And that's very commendable, because that's not easy.
Thank you so much. I really do appreciate that, but he's worth it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely so. Now, how can people find your book and tell us about when it's going to be on the market available, you're thinking?
Absolutely. You can go to my website. It's www.lisagenosa.com. That's LISAGENNOSA.com. And it should be out in April. We're hoping early April, but maybe early to mid. And we're very excited.
All right. That sounds really good. So, folks, I know that this is a really good resource book if you're facing any kind of problems like this in your personal life. So I hope you've enjoyed getting to know Lisa a little bit today, and you'll be looking for this book to make a purchase.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for being on the show. And as always, thank you, listeners, for listening.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Everybody has a story. Just let your mind drift away and find yours. I know it's out there. What are you waiting for?